Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to Development Hell.
For every horror movie to hit VOD, there are countless others that end up DOA. Development Hell is a podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're gonna find out what went wrong and decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korangut. I'm a filmmaker located in Toronto, Canada. Development Hell is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network. Today's episode is going to be all about Army of Darkness Part 2. So I'm going to be looking into all of the rumors over the years about there being a continuation to Sam Raimi's Army of Darkness. Our guest today is Jason Jenkins. Jason is a writer for Bloody Disgusting, and he also has a podcast, which is called Scream Addicts. So please, please, please enjoy our episode all about Army of Darkness, the lost sequel, featuring Jason Jenkins. Hi, Jason. Would you be able to give us like a quick introduction to who you are as a person?
Certainly, yeah. So my name's Jason Jenkins. My nickname is Jinx, likely due to my last name, but I'm also a bit of bad luck from time to time, which is a shame, but you know, it's a handle I've used since I was a teenager. I am a writer for Bloody Disgusting. I have a podcast called Scream Addicts, which has various offshoots. The main sort of Scream Addicts title, it's kind of simple. You know, I just invite on creatives in horror and ask them to choose a single horror movie that they love, and we talk about it at length. I have an offshoot called Voyeurism, where, oh, I don't know what you would call him. He's kind of a B, C, and Z grade film aficionado. Named Scott Foy. He chooses some crazy obscure film that I've never seen, and, you know, we discuss that. And then there is Scream Addicts Hammer Pub, which finds myself and co-host Paul Farrell providing a running commentary for a Hammer horror film while having a drink or five. Although I've been I've been teetotaling the podcast recently, but it's still a pub.
Yeah, I was scrolling through your articles for Phantom Limbs, and yes, I did come across the first one, the Candyman one, which is interesting because I covered a Candyman sequel recently. And I also saw, I think it may have been your most recent column, which was on a possible third House on Haunted Hill. Would it have taken place like literally after canon of Return to House on Haunted Hill?
No. I think both in a way, you know. Of course, at the end of the previous film, Return, that we actually got, you know, it's said that the evil in the house actually comes from this, strange Baphomet idol. And at the end of the movie, The idol is sort of flushed, you know, from the home into the, was it like the sewer system, I think, something like that. And there's sort of that foreboding final shot of it racing towards a big city in the distance. And so I think the third film was going to pick up with that idea. Presumably the idol was going to get lodged beneath a hospital. One of the characters in a Halloween 2 sort of way was going to wind up at that hospital to get their wounds tended to. And then the evil Dr. Vanicott and all of his undead, or rather quite dead and very ghostly, patients were going to pop up in the hospital, and presumably hijinks would have ensued.
Bring it back. My favorite franchise. I think a lot of like 2000s kids like can't get enough of the Dark Castle output, and that includes me. So
I can't get enough of it. I love to revisit it. You know, it's funny. At the time, I remember reading, you know, on horror movie message boards and certainly in the pages of Fango, you know, there was, you were never wanting for a critic to sling a stone at a Dark Castle film. Everybody seemed to dislike Haunted Hill. Everyone hated 13 Ghosts. You know, all of those movies got savaged. And you know what? I loved every one of them. Maybe not Gothica so much, but I appreciate what they were going for. And, you know, it's been very nice to see the current generation sort of coming around on those movies and sort of, you know, pay homage to them and look back on them lovingly. And it's amazing that Scream Factory is sort of leading the charge on all of these revisits with those amazing collector's edition Blu-rays. So
beautiful. Like, who knew Ghost Ship was going to get this much respect today as it deserves?
And it deserves it. Absolutely. 100%. I love
even if it's just that scene.
Definitely that scene is a standout. That scene is arguably the best scene of horror that Dark Castle ever did, period. But, you know, the rest of the movie, I think, is quite a lot of fun too. And I just love the idea. You know, we don't really get movies like that anymore where you get a studio supported, say, $15, $20 million mid-range horror film where you have a, you know, an Oscar winner who's brought on in a supporting role. Oh, in 13 Ghosts, it was F. Murray Abraham. I don't know that Gabriel Byrne ever won an Oscar, but damn it, he should have. You know, I by that point, I think they were just kind of going for a recognizable name. And I love that it was kind of the producers behind the Dark Castle line. They had previously come off of HBO's Tales from the Crypt. And it seemed like it was that sort of setup where you could invite on a star to just come in and have fun and chew a little scenery and do up a production in such a way that it felt like prestige horror. But at the same time, you could have fun and munch on some popcorn while laughing, cackling, and screaming all at once. You know, and I miss that. I don't feel like we get that nearly enough these days, if really at all.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. It's sort of like a fun but also sincere horror, and I don't know if we get both at the same time so often anymore.
Yes, just something unapologetic. There's nothing wrong with it. And here's the thing. I absolutely adore, you know, the more A24 style horror films. You know, I do love the deadly serious horror films, you know, obviously. But it seems like, and I do adore the movie, but it seems like post-Grindhouse, there was this feeling that somewhere in there, you kind of had to apologize to audiences if you were making them laugh or if they were hooting and hollering along with it or just having fun, you know? And I felt like,
totally.
I feel like, you know, that can go ahead. I like that, you know, that's fun, certainly, but can we put that to bed for a bit now and go back to making earnest but fun movies that are very unapologetic?
Well, speaking of horror comedies, this is where we're going today, which is hilarious. But I don't want to go there just yet, because next for you, because you're my development health friend, I was wondering, do you have any favorite, like, canceled horror projects? Because I ask this to people all the time, and they're always like, what are you talking about? And I was like, oh, I guess not everyone in the world has favorite canceled horror movies. But because you're always, you know, in that niche, I was wondering, do you have any that you're sitting on?
Ooh, that is a great question. I have, you know, I have a couple of white whales that I'm sort of constantly chasing with Phantom Limbs. But, you know, I got to say, out of all of the movies that I wish could have been made, out of all of the movies that I've loved writing about, in fact, because I got to do it last fall, weirdly enough, Halloween 6 was the one that kind of most fascinated me, specifically the one that was tied to Tarantino and Scott Spiegel, just because I'm a Tarantino nerd, mainly because, you know, that was one of the first sort of unmade movies that I ever heard about, you know, back in the 90s when I was a Fango kid, you know, old Fango, original Fango, you know, when I was reading that magazine, one of the first issues that I ever picked up talked about the fact that the Halloween 6 that we got was not the Halloween 6 that was planned. And in fact, there was going to be a Quentin Tarantino produced version. Now, as a guy who was just coming off of like Pulp Fiction and From Dusk Till Dawn, I was a huge fan of those. And I thought, my God, what could he have done with Michael Myers? And there have been all these stories floating around over the years. You know, he hasn't talked about it much. He did this great interview last year with Michael Rothman, and he talked about it a little bit. But there was kind of a gray area as to what exactly was going to happen there. Was he going to write it? Was he only going to produce it? Was he going to direct it possibly? You know, what was Scott Spiegel? You know, was he a co-writer? Was he going to direct? Who knows? But actually, I was fortunate enough last Halloween to be able to speak to Scott Spiegel at length, and he really sort of ironed out the timeline of that film's development. And he really, you know, he was great about providing some insight into what his take was going to be. You know, he in fact was going to write and direct, and Tarantino was going to produce and perhaps come on and, you know, write in some fashion too. But unfortunately, you know, you had a bit of gold that was fumbled right back into the river with the Weinsteins being ahead of the project. So it never came to be, and we got what we got. And, you know, I dig both versions of what Halloween 6 wound up being, but that is probably the main one. When I think of unmade movie, I kind of wish that we had gotten, and I'd like to think that there's an alternate version where we do have a Quentin Tarantino Presents Halloween 6.
Wow, what a good answer. I could clap. So there's so many incredible, bizarre, unmade Halloween movies, and I'm going to tackle one of them for my next episode.
Oh, nice.
But I never actually came across that much information on the Tarantino version. It's always, like, whispered about, so I'm excited to read your article and include it in our show notes. There is an article, right? This is what you're referring to?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Last October, I did a series of four, well, actually wound up being a series of five Halloween series related articles to sort of celebrate spooky season.
An unending depth to the unmade Halloween sequels. And they have some incredible names, as I'm sure you're aware of. Like Halloween 3000, that's my favorite one. MichaelMyers.com, also good.
Oh my God, Michael Myers! Was that too far astray from what we got with Halloween Resurrection?
No, in fact, that was what we got was an evolution of MichaelMyers.com, and MichaelMyers.com, a real website, a photographer, check him out. Because I always write it out, and then it like accidentally hyperlinks, and I'm always on MichaelMyers.com. It's very funny.
There is a great book that came out at around the same time last fall. It was strange that the book came out right in the middle of my run of Phantom Limbs. You know, there was a bit of crossover there. Fortunately, I don't think either one of us really wound up repeating that much info, but there is a book called,
Taking Shape 2?
Thank you. Taking Shape 2 about all the, it is the size of a phone book, and it covers at length all of these
things. Oh, is it? I don't have it yet, but I cannot wait to buy it. I've like messaged, I don't know, what's the name, the author a couple of times.
Yes, yeah. It is definitely worth picking up. There's so much insight into so many movies that, you know, some of them you've heard about, but there are so many that I had no idea existed. There was one in particular penned by Scott Malam, who was going to do one for Platinum Dunes, that is maybe the most fascinating take on what a remake of that story could be. It's from the writer of Mother's Day and a couple of other things. I think he was just hired to do something fairly major recently. But if you get the chance to read that one, and well, actually the entire book, definitely worth it.
Was that Halloween Asylum, or am I just...
I think Halloween Asylum was that Stephen Hutchinson, I think? The Scott Malam one was... actually, I don't know that it was called anything other than Halloween, but when you get to it in the book, it is the Platinum Dunes version, and they talk about it's the one with the yacht in it, and that's all I'll say. And you wouldn't imagine that a yacht...
I'll remember that.
Wouldn't figure into it. And again, I don't know that that would necessarily work in the movie the way it is as a setting, but there is... Let me just, without spoiling it for you, I would just say that there is an aspect of Michael Myers in the story that we have never quite seen before. And how he chooses to tease that out is just kind of fascinating.
Cool. Well, I'm absolutely addicted to what you're talking about. I cannot wait to find out. I can't wait for Halloween, as always. Are you watching anything spooky lately?
You know, it's funny. Just earlier today, I finally caught up on Creepshow on Shudder, which,
cool. Me too.
Did you really? Okay, wasn't the new episode a lot of fun?
I might not have seen the brand new one, but I've seen, like, the first two. Is there more than that?
Yeah, well, I think the third episode came out, wasn't today, it was a couple of days ago now, but, it's the one that opens with, I think the first tale is kind of a sci-fi horror tale directed by Joe Lynch and starring Ryan Kwanten. And then the second one was really fun sort of, I don't want to spoil it. I'll just say it's a high school set kind of a horror comedy with Molly Ringwald in kind of a supporting role. And
oh my God, they're having so much fun over there. I'm so jealous of these people living their best lives.
It really is. God, you know, damn. I gotta say, I don't know about you, but I maybe wasn't the biggest fan of the first season, even if I appreciated what they were going for. But this second season, I think, is all around just much, much stronger.
Yeah, it is. I agree with you totally. I was having it on in the background because, as you were saying, I wasn't too excited about it, but I'm grateful that it exists. And I had the Ali Larter one segment on in the background.
So much fun. And I think that one was directed by Axel Carolyn.
Well, I was just listening to it, working. And then I was like, okay, I gotta start watching this. This sounds bonks. And it was. It really was. So I gotta start paying attention to season two because it's clearly, it's, oh yeah, and there was one, I think it's the same episode where they have like a children's show,
yes,
like Evil Dead crossover.
Absolutely.
So good.
Yeah, so. I love that. I almost wish that they hadn't gone the route that they did by, you know, there's almost a meta approach with that installment where, you know, Ted Raimi is playing Ted Raimi, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
Almost wish they hadn't done that and they had just somehow, some way had made it an actual extension to the Evil Dead franchise. It would have been so much fun.
It would have been fun. Clearly they were allowed. Clearly they were allowed to do what they were doing. So that would have been really fun. I agree. Yeah. When I saw him there and I was like, what's going on? So yeah, I need to pay a bit better attention to this season. That's a really good answer. My answer, because I'm asking myself too, is I revisited Wishmaster recently. I rewatch Wishmaster once every 2 years or so, and I never regret it. I'll have to be honest with you. It's just one of those movies that I can't get enough of.
It's so much fun. You know, it goes back to what we were talking about with you know, Dark Castle. There is another movie that had a pretty healthy budget. It had a theatrical release.
Totally had a healthy budget.
You know, and
speaking of Raimi.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. And you know, that felt like almost, I've heard over the course of the past, well, what's it been like a decade since the Inciting movie came out, but when the Expendables came out, I remember, you know, so many movies wanting to do like an Expendables of horror. Why can't we bring together all the actors that we know? And it's like, they already kind of did that.
They
back
did.
In 97.
They did. They truly did. Although Kane Hodder's death needs justice. Just what was that? Maybe it looked better in 1997. It feels like the CGI from the Langoliers miniseries. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes.
Which, you know what? Why am I making fun of it? I appreciate everything about it. People love to talk about how gay Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is, obviously. It's like a cliche at this point. We don't talk about how gay Wishmaster 2 is. And anyone that's out there that hasn't seen it, I urge you to watch it because there's so much gay in it. And it's the same director, Jack Scholder, as Nightmare on Elm Street 2. What is going on with this guy?
That is true. You know, I think we know, actually. I have to admit it. I have not seen 2, 3, or 4. I picked up that great Vestron, like, series, that franchise box set with all four movies. I need to blaze through them. But, you know, it's curious.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I haven't seen 3 or 4 either.
I've heard that they're maybe not that good. You know,
oh, of course, they're terrible. How could they be good? We would know by now if they were even watchable. But that's actually how I watched number 1, is I was trying to watch 3 and 4, and in Canada, there was just, like, no streaming option, and I just...
Fair enough.
That's enough for the pleasantries. I think we should jump into it. So before we get, like, too far ahead of ourselves with Army of Darkness, we gotta go back again to the origins of Evil Dead 1 and Evil Dead. What is your relationship with these movies?
So I kind of watched the franchise backwards. I sort of came to Evil Dead 1 and 2 after Army of Darkness. I adored the second film from the moment I saw it. I still do. I think it is to this day the only installment of the original trilogy that I've seen theatrically at a midnight screening about 20 years ago at the historic Kentucky Theater in Lexington. And it was a great rowdy crowd. It was a great screening. And I gotta say, the first film took me a while to come around on. I used to sort of only view it as a rough draft. of Part 2 and Army of Darkness that didn't quite get the humor of those films. And as I got older and revisited it more, I realized that it was never really attempting to be that humorous. You know,
No.
Not a bit. So once I sort of accepted it for what it is, I really appreciated its low budget charms and its genuinely scary moments throughout. I think it's just amazing to watch that first film and see Campbell and Raimi sort of slowly finding their creative voices.
It was my first foray into the genre, and I was like an itty bitty baby, and it scared me for real. But yeah, I think the second one is sort of, I don't know, I can't speak for everyone, but it's like the thesis of this franchise. It like really gets it all wrapped up very tightly, like the tone and the jokes and all of it. It's a perfect film. It is a perfect film. I showed my best friend, who's not a horror person, but like is interested in horror to some degree, and she definitely preferred the first to the second.
Wow.
The second is just, it can be difficult to get if you haven't spent a lot of time with horror. I don't know. The tone is crazy. It's hard to grasp.
It is. And, you know, I think it's all the more so kind of hard to grasp, especially for people who maybe aren't initiated with horror comedies that much, simply because it does such an amazing job of fusing the two together at once all the way throughout. You know, with most horror comedies, you have the horror, you know, for a moment, and then you have just stretches of comedy. It's kind of compartmentalized. And what I love about Evil Dead 2, even though it's not a movie that I would necessarily call terrifying at lengths, it is a horror movie. It's absolutely a horror movie, and it's absolutely a comedy. And those two things are often happening at once, you know, coinciding at the same time. And that's rare. And it's rare still that somebody can sort of nail it in the way that Raimi and company does.
Nails it. It's so off-putting. Very... am I going to use this term right? Uncanny Valley?
Yeah.
Where you're like, this looks human, but it's not human, and I need to be wary of it. Like, the whole experience.
No,
like, where he's watching her dance out of the cabin, and you're like, I should be laughing, but I'm so uncomfortable. Claymation really fucks with me, I have to say. I remember when I was a little kid, me and my dad were watching some kind of, like, heavy metal music video marathon, and too many of them were claymation, and I was like, no, this is... so weird.
I will take a good claymation sequence over CG any day of the week. And I'm not a snob about CG if it's done well, but there is something about, you know, you just register it differently when you're watching it. You can believe that it's happening. You know, I would put Ted Raimi in, you know, transforming into the long-necked ghoul near the end of Evil Dead 2 against any CG creation. As far as, you know, getting the hair on the back of the wrist. But, you know, it's just a little, it's... And the
that
Linda dance
guy
sequence
is just tortured constantly in the series. It's disgusting. Like, no thank you. It's like, his life is like a COVID test. It just didn't look comfortable at any moment.
No, poor Ted Raimi. He suffers for his art. That's a fact. Or his brother's yeah. art, in this case. You know?
Yeah, there's such, we'll get into this later, but there's such Three Stooges energy, like that whole family. Yeah, and it didn't really hit me over the head until this rewatch of Army of Darkness, where literally every scene, I was like, this is a reference to the Three Stooges.
The cemetery sequence is just pure Three Stooges, I think. I love that so much. And, you know, that's, once you get to Army of Darkness, I think that's when it sort of lets go of the horror and lets go of that sort of natural eeriness, you know, that was sort of holding over from part one. You know, it's a really great kind of arc that original trilogy has, you know, from one to two, to Army of Darkness, where you start out with horror, then you go to horror comedy, and then by the time you reach Army of Darkness, we're in a complete farce, you know?
Well, that's really leads me into, like, our Army of Darkness territory, and talking about the genre shakeup. I think, I didn't say this yet, but growing up, Army of Darkness was always my least favorite of the three, because I was always like, why isn't this horror? Like, this doesn't feel like horror to me in a traditional way. I didn't really get it when I was younger, and then I didn't have that attachment to it in the same way over the years, which made this viewing really interesting, because it changed my mind. Like, I was like, oh no, I think this is horror. This is like medieval, like Xena horror, but it's still pretty, like, it's scary sometimes. The evil Ash is scary to look at, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a creepy, creepy image, definitely. You know, it goes back to you know, again, kind of that eeriness that you have. You know, definitely, I don't know that I was ever, I never found the character completely frightening. And yet there are some close-ups on him where you look at him and you just kind of, you feel those wounds a little bit. And you kind of just, your skin crawls a little bit at him.
It's bad. It's like, okay, so his face got blasted off. And now he's like, he's holding it together with a rope. And it's just, and it looks a little too real. And then you see Bruce Campbell's eyes behind it. And it's just like, oh, okay. Like, they're going for it. I like when you were talking about the progression between the films, because I was thinking about that a lot watching it this time around, where the scope just gets progressively bigger and bigger to the point where the next film was supposed to be, like, even more fantastical and more of, like, a visuals. And I kind of wish I could have seen them take it up a notch yet again. But you can see them do it sort of step by step with these three movies.
Absolutely. You know, who knows how big the fourth film might have gotten. You know, and I really do wish that we could have seen that at some point.
Me too. Me too. I'm shocked we even have four films in a TV series. Like, that feels lucky to me at this point, considering what we're dealing with.
I think I remember, you know, when it was announced that Ash vs. Evil Dead was finally canceled, you know, after three seasons, you know, people were starting to, you know, you could feel the near riot online, you know, I forget how many episodes we got per season, but in any case, yeah, I think it was 10 episodes per season, three seasons, so we got like 15 hours of Evil Dead, when previously we had only had like, what, 4.5, 5 maybe?
Maybe.
Like that, you know? So.
Yeah. And I was grateful that we had three seasons. I remember having a sort of similar reaction when it got canceled. People were really mad, and I was just like, how did that happen? How did we have three seasons of the show? Also, if you're that mad, where were you? Why weren't you watching it?
Absolutely. You know, I've talked to people before who were like, oh, I can't believe they canceled that. Can you believe? I mean, it's Ash. It's great. And I start to talk about the ending, which I absolutely adore. And, you know, I'll hear, oh, no, wait, I haven't seen the third season yet. And it's like, you are part of the
problem. How dare you? Yeah, Bruce Campbell was like, telling us. He was like, guys, you gotta watch it, because we're in trouble.
I do hate to say it, but I kind of am okay with, if Bruce Campbell is telling the truth this time, and when has he ever, in regards to this franchise, never, but if he's telling the truth about finally hanging it up as Ash, I do think that the final 10 minutes of the third season of Ash vs. Evil Dead is the perfect note to go on, to go out on with that character. Now, that depends on what you find that ending to mean. Now, if people find it to be a cliffhanger, then I can understand why people would be upset and they would want to see more. I personally don't think those final moments are necessarily what they appear to be at first glance. And as a result, I think it gives that character sort of very definitive ending. But you don't hear a lot of people talking about it simply because nobody's watched the damn season. So
it's mysterious, but I think it's a happy ending.
Oh, totally.
And I sort of see it as like Laurie Strode's finale in H2O. It's like, I could have left it there. I like our hero overcoming the great evil at the end, even if there is a bit of a...
You know, I guess I should say spoiler warning for anyone out there who hasn't yet seen it. And again, you're part of the problem. But but I will say, I found, you know, at the great arc with Ash in that series is that they really, not only did they bring over the character from the films, but they gave him an arc in that series where he was a man who was very, very selfish. You know, even at the end of the first season going into the second, this is a man who would sort of throw over humanity for his own happiness and to just not suffer anymore. By the time you get to the end of the final episode with him, he's a man who's finally willing to sacrifice himself to save his friends and to save all of humanity. And it feels like this is what everything has been leading to. It culminates in this big battle with the big bad, as it were. And then he, at the end of that battle, he is left in a situation that should have been kind of mortal to him. It should have been utterly fatal what happens to him. And then the next thing you see, he wakes up and it's the future, and he has, you know, this really attractive woman on his arm, and he has a new hand, and he has a cool car, And he's going to ride out into the world and he's going to fight evil forever because it's all about the continuing battle for him. And I think that that is Ash Williams' death dream.
How dare you ruin my life.
but that provides definitive closure for him because he did what he set out to do. He sacrificed himself, you know, and died a great person. And then on some level, he is happy. Not only is he happy, he's gleeful, you know. I think that's the perfect note to leave that guy on.
Yeah, I mean, he deserves the best, you know. Yeah. He's her only dude hero, really, in canon. So we have to be precious with him. And yeah, talking about this whole hero's journey with Ash as like an anti-hero is, you know, present the whole time. He doesn't want to be doing any of this, but he has to do it. You have that in Army of Darkness. You have that with the TV show. And I think when you're getting to the heart of any epic story in fantasy or sci-fi or horror, like, it's always coming down to that. It's very Harry Potter. It's very the Bible. It's
very true. And, you know, it's definitely encapsulated in Army of Darkness, I think. Although he is a hero time and time again, you know, you have the refusal of the call. And then eventually, you know, he'll become the hero that he was always meant to be, certainly. In Ash's case, he refuses many, many times. He continues to refuse.
He just falls into the hole. He doesn't have a... It's not his choice. It's non-consensual.
He is a long-suffering hero. That's a fact. But, I do love that.
Yeah.
At the end of every story, you know, he is a guy who kind of digs deep and finds the hero within. And I think that's why we like him, because he always starts these stories out as the buffoon that we think ourselves to be. You know, like we're all Ash, you know. And
yes, then or at least the average horror fan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And then, you know, by the end, Ash is always showing himself, but also the audience is the heroes that they can be. And he's a blue-collar horror hero, and there aren't many of those. And I think that's why we love him so much.
I agree. He is totally a blue-collar horror hero. And he's our only final boy, which I think gives him something to, you know, either something about that, too, that makes him so special.
Yeah.
We talked about the Three Stooges. I want to talk a little bit about Man versus Self, but that's so, like, university essay that I'm bored with it. Scariest scene. Okay, so scariest scene in Army of Darkness, in my opinion, is when his face gets all stretched out with the claymation. It's too gross, too strange. Do you have, a scariest moment in this movie?
You know, I don't know that I find any of the moments to be, like, super scary. I mean, there is that great, like, wonderfully gothic sort of moment where, Ash buries bad Ash, and then he is resurrected, right? And, you know, the goofy sort of piecemeal way that he leaps from the grave in various pieces and then heals himself is a little silly. But everything leading up until that point and then after the big reveal, I think, is really kind of wonderful and a little, you know, maybe a little creepy. Honestly, as funny as it is, I do love the sequence where he fights all of his tiny little selves, which is funny. You mentioned Man versus Self a moment ago. I do think, you know, the more we get to know Ash throughout the franchise, and I think this especially included the television series, but I think we realize that Ash is his own worst enemy. You know, forget the book, forget the Deadites. Like, it's Ash versus Ash, and I love that in Army of Darkness we finally see that play out physically on screen in such a literal way.
Very literally, yes. Yeah. yes, because, yeah, we have Ash versus his hand, and then we Ash versus the tiny Ashes. And then finally he splits into two and it's Ash versus Ash. So I don't know what, like, there's a few, like, I'm a dummy, so I don't know what I'm talking about right now. But there's, like, a few of those man versus archetypes in literature. So, like, man versus the wild, man versus self, and then a third one. And I feel like Raimi was very sort of cognizant of these tropes going into these movies.
Oh, yeah, and constantly throwing his long-suffering hero headfirst into them. You know, it's perfect.
Yeah. You know that he's got some persistent back pain, poor guy. And so I'm grateful that we have Ash.
Well, it's funny, you know, we were talking about the progression. You were talking about the movies getting bigger and bigger. I think Campbell himself got bigger and bigger, too. You know, in the first film, he looks kind of like just a normal, you know, he's a handsome dude, but he looks like just a normal college kid. you know, you get to him in the second one, he looks a little more like mid-80s action hero. He's a little more cut, you know, he's a little more muscly. You get to him in the third film, like, he's a bare-chested, swashbuckling, you know, ready for sword and sandals, you know.
Oh, absolutely. He's He-Man, Master of the Universe. The poster is not animated. It's just a photo of him. So, no, absolutely. Yeah, you were talking about how you're maybe okay with Ash, you know, retiring. I think I agree with that. Because we've had such a good run with him. And he's never been stale, which is, like, almost shocking that we haven't...
Yeah.
That he hasn't overstayed his whatever yet. And I think that, like, this is good timing. Also, I love seeing, like, new protagonists in this franchise. The remake, I don't know how you feel about it, but I love it. And I love Mia in it. And I think this franchise is just ripe for more female leads. And I think we're going to be getting one soon.
I agree. I absolutely adore the remake. It's funny. You know, I honestly think it's one of the best made, like, genuinely frightening, genuinely terrifying films of this century so far. It's crazy to me how good that film is, and it doesn't get nearly the sort of appreciation that it should, I don't think. Especially,
oh, it's so scary.
You know, given that it's apparently viewed as being in canon with the previous franchise too, what with the bandied about crossover that they talked about for a while, I'm not sure it's even... I'm not sure it's so much a remake anymore as a spinoff, but let's call it a remake for the purposes of saying it's one of the best damn horror remakes ever.
Oh, completely agree with you. They do their own original thing. They're not slaves to the humor or the camp of it. And yet it's so effective and it's so scary and it's so disgusting. I saw it on my birthday one year and my best friend Jules is still traumatized. Sorry, Jules.
I'm still traumatized.
She says she still thinks about that shower scene like once a week.
You know what got me? I used to take bi-weekly. No, they were. I'm sorry, not bi-weekly. They were twice a week. Allergy shots when I was a kid. So anything with a needle, like we're talking the needle pit in Saw 2. Like I nearly collapsed in the theater. But that moment,
sorry.
The stabbing of the hand in the Evil Dead remake. Forget. Cutting one's tongue into, like, lengthwise. Forget the shower. Forget the red rain at the end and the chainsaw. Damn it. Forget all of that. That tiny damn needle punching into the hand over and over again. Ooh.
Yeah, that was for you. That was a little gift for you. I'm glad that you liked it. Yeah, that movie had a little something for all of us, and I'm so grateful that they did. And I kind of like how they played with an updated, never mind the cameo at the end, but, like, they kind of played with a bit of an updated Ash with the brother character. How he, like, kind of had a similar features, similar outfit, but he wasn't front and center. And I thought that was kind of, like, a fun take on Ash.
Absolutely.
Almost ready to start talking Army of Darkness 2. But before we do, like, do you have any, like, I don't know, any final thoughts on your experience, your relationship with the original film? Yeah.
You know, I guess just my first experience, it was kind of funny. I had seen ads for Army of Darkness when it was hitting theaters on the backs of, it seemed, every comic book that I read in the early 90s. And while I loved Darkman, you know, now I had zero interest in checking out this movie. I had no clue who Bruce Campbell was. I had no clue about it being the third film in a franchise. I couldn't have cared less. Mm. Cut to years later, I'm in high school. I wake up early one Saturday morning. I get pumped with cappuccino and donuts, and I go get my brain fried taking the ACT. And I come back home. My mind is just mush, and I slump down on the
floor. I'm sorry, what is ACT?
Oh, that's a it's kind of like a qualifying exam to get into colleges and whatnot.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm Canadian.
No, you're good. You're good. It's they're
okay,
all,
okay.
They're so awful.
Okay, I'm with you though. I have like the image on my head. This is like mid 90s.
Yeah, this would have been. Well, it had come out in the early 90s. I had sort of. I never watched it. Never had any interest. But after this horrible test sort of had its way with me, I came home. I slumped down. I turned the television on to the Sci-Fi Channel, and I'm watching this guy fight tiny versions of himself in this dark cabin, and I just start cackling wildly at it all. I watched it to the end, not realizing what it was until the credits rolled, and I immediately ran to my local mom and pop to rent the movie and watch it again, and I just adored it. Even though I had to learn the hard way about the various cuts of the film by watching the VHS, which was missing some of the crazier stuff I saw on the, weirdly enough, edited for television sci-fi version. But, you know, like they were missing some of the tiny Ash sequence, not all of it, but some of the more Three Stooges stuff, like him slipping in the gruel and flipping and doing the handstand and then coming back down, stuff like that they had trimmed. But I was like, wait, where was that? Come on, you know? You know, sort of being a burgeoning horror fan surfing about, you know, on late 90s message boards, I eventually learned that Army of Darkness was the third film in the franchise. So I sought out the previous films to check out. And I will say Evil Dead 2 was not hard to find. Evil Dead was insanely hard to find. Like, no rental store had it. No shop sold it. It could not be ordered. You couldn't just watch a movie online back then.
What year was this?
This would have been around, I want to see, like 96, 97. It was just before Elite and Anchor Bay started pumping out all these great horror titles in plastic clamshell VHS cases and eventually DVDs. Uh-huh. So I was able to finally see that first film that way, you know, and that was that first VHS. That was probably the first of roughly 70 times I purchased that film on home video. There have been so many versions of all the Evil Dead movies, and I buy them all because I'm a sucker, but, you know, I can't help it.
I love that. Yeah, there are so many versions of this film. And even though, like, the longest one out there is, like, what, 90 minutes? There's still, like, 30 different versions out there. And I cannot promise you that I have seen every moment of it, although I have tried. I know for a fact, and we'll get into it soon, that I have seen the alternate ending, which I'm a little bit obsessed with. So I would say, like, it was about the mid to late 90s when I really started to discover horror. And by then, it was pretty accessible, as you were saying. All of these VHSs, like, every gas station had VHSs of horror. It was all accessible to me by then. But that's funny that you had to go searching for the Evil Dead. I kind of like that. It kind of feels appropriate.
Being a movie fan.
Very Necronomicon.
Totally. Being a movie fan, and especially being a horror fan back in the 90s growing up, you really, like, if you wanted to get into the more obscure stuff, and even by obscure, I'm talking about stuff that wouldn't even be considered obscure these days, like Dario Argento and Lucio Fulci and Italian Jolly and, like, all those movies, like, those were very, very hard to come by the time. I couldn't find, if you can believe this, I had trouble finding a VHS copy of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the first one, back in the day. Like, I had to go to my local mom and pop and have them order it through their distribution because my local Camelot Music was not able to order it, and I couldn't find it at any of the neighboring video stores. You would find a Texas Chainsaw 2 here and a Leatherface there, but you had to put in work as a movie fan back in the 90s. Now everything's, you know, and I'm sounding very old man, you know, get off my lawn, but you know, these days, kids, they have everything at their fingertips, you know.
On YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. But back in the day, you had to work for it.
Oh, yeah. And if you wanted special features, like if you wanted a trailer, God help you. It's not going to happen. But it made it so much more special.
It did. You know, I remember.
And then DVDs came out and we all died. I remember the first time I saw that, the Alien, like, DVD menu. And I was like, oh my, it, like, really blew my mind. So yeah, so, you know, we didn't have it all, but I still like the journey that we had. It was more special.
I agree.
But now that you can literally rent anything on YouTube, and I do in fact, I rented this on YouTube because it's not streaming anywhere in Canada, and I didn't want to take out my box of DVDs.
I don't blame you.
Okay, so we're gonna start to dig into the lore surrounding Army of Darkness 2. Spoiler alert, there's not that much of it, although there's some. And so that's why we had to really pad this episode with the origins. And I think it was fun, and I think everyone really appreciated it. And so now they're going to just be grateful for this Army of Darkness 2 report card that we're about to hand out. So I'm assuming, based on everything that you said, that you are obviously was always aware that there was rumors of a continuation to Army of Darkness.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As a As a fan, again, who constantly haunted message boards and horror film news websites back in the day, you couldn't go very long without Bruce Campbell giving an interview and saying that we'd be seeing Evil Dead 4 at some point, or we would never see it. We'd maybe see it. It'll definitely happen. It's never happening, but you never know. Keep your fingers crossed, but also dick. I'm going to dash your hopes. It was always, you know, there is
no doing that.
Better, no more marvelous troll of his own fans than Bruce Campbell.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely agree. Which is why when they started talking about Evil Dead Now or Evil Dead Rise, I was like, okay, sweetie, we'll see. But I am starting to believe that it's a thing. So I want you to know that I have definitely seen the international ending. So just I guarantee you on that. But for our more casual horror fare out there, like my mom, can you explain to us what the original Army of Darkness ending looked like? Because then we're going to talk about how that kind of would have maybe stemmed into a sequel.
Okay, so if you watch the theatrical version of Army of Darkness, Ash is obviously in medieval times. He is given a special potion by the wizard. He is meant to take just so many drops, one for, I believe, every century. He heads into a cave. He blasts it to wall himself in. He hops into the car. He takes the drops, and he wakes up in the present day, and you have this wonderfully fun sequence in S-Mart once he's returned and, you know, taken to telling Ted Raimi all about his time as a king.
A very cute-looking Ted Raimi, by the way. But
yeah, they're all so young in that movie. It's crazy. They're babies.
They're so young.
In the original director's cut, there is this great moment with Ash in the cave. He takes, was it like six drops, something like that?
Maybe one or two too many.
Yeah, he's counting the drops, and then something catches his attention. He thinks that something might be in the cave with him. He gets distracted, and then he turns back, and he counts the last drop again, continues, finishes. Then you see this wonderful sort of like time dissolve. You can tell that centuries are passing. He's remaining the same age, even though he's growing this marvelously Rip Van Winkle beard and long hair.
Yeah.
And he eventually wakes up. He breaks out of the cave. He walks out, and there's this look of horror that only Bruce Campbell can do. And then there's this great reverse shot over his shoulder where you see this horribly dystopian world sat before him where he has obviously slept too long. In fact, he cries that out. Oh God, I've slept too long. And you realize that he is now a man out of time again, only this time in the future.
It's so on brand for Ash. Like, this is exactly what should and would have happened to this poor dude. It's just like a constant carousel of errors for this poor guy, which I do love the studio inflicted version because it's a fun ending and it gives us one of the most iconic last finale lines of all time. But this feels a little bit more appropriate to me because I don't think this guy I don't think this guy realistically would ever get this clean cut happy ending because it's just not in the cards for him.
No, he's meant to be a long-suffering hero. It's like the original ending of Dumb and Dumber. You know, you hear that those guys were meant to get on the bus with all of the beautiful women and ride off into the sunset. And I think it was it Jim Carrey who said, there is no way that those guys would get on that bus, you know? And I feel the same way about Bruce Campbell. Absolutely. As Ash. Like Ash, I love that he gets a happy ending at the end of Army of Darkness, but that's also not that guy, you know?
No, which is why your theory makes more and more sense, because the only way he would get that happy ending is if he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forget. I'm Jewish, so I should remember this properly. But we have the schlamazel or the schlemiels. And this is what Ash is. Just like the guy that's like constantly dropping his ice cream, kind of. And it's sad, but it's just kind of like, and then we all know them too. So poor Ash. So that was going to lead, this is like the most well-known iteration of what Army of Darkness 2 or Evil Dead 4 could have been was this dystopic, futuristic sequel where Ash could have potentially been taking on hordes of deadites in the future. Like, he was going to be fighting machines, sort of like a Sarah Connor-type character. That could have been really, really fun. It's been suggested, as you sort of touched base on, that there was an Army of Darkness 2 potentially going to happen. a sequel to the remake, and then a possibly stitched together like crossover moment where Ash and Mia team up. I don't know in what world that ever could have happened if we would have had like a Marvel extended universe of the Evil Dead.
We should, though. Like, we need
we
the...
Should. We deserve it.
We need the AODCU, you know? I just think that would have been fantastic. I think seeing a much more grounded character like Mia, who's dealt with tragedy and horror in a much more visceral way, playing against Ash's more super heroic buffoonery, I think it would have made, you know, for a tonal challenge. But if they could have nailed it, I think the result would have been magic.
Yeah, and Ash is such a dad too, and we've played with that successfully in the franchise, where, you know, not only did his daughter successfully sort of come up in the third season of Ash versus the Evil Dead, I think it was season three, but he's like sort of been the dad archetype to a number of like women characters. So I kind of think it would have worked. I think it could have been like a really cute Buffy Giles dynamic.
Oh, totally. Although it's strange because Mia out of the two would have been the more mature one.
Exactly. No, totally. And that's like the, you know, that would have been a source of conflict for them, maybe. But
I would
love So the director of the Evil Dead remake, I don't know. Do you know how to pronounce his name? Because if you do, please do it.
Fede Alvarez?
That's him. Also, killed it. Good job. He is just nailing it in the world, too. His films are great. Someone tweeted at him a million years ago, around October 2013, saying, will you be directing an Army of Darkness 2? And he didn't say no, but then he just responded with, Sam Raimi will. So clearly, there are, like, you know, these parties where these dudes are just getting together and, like, talking about potential sequels that could happen. Who's directing Evil Dead Rise?
Oh, gosh. I do not know.
Hole in the Ground. Okay, Lee Cronin. Yeah. I feel like the Ghost House guys are really good at finding young talent that other people kind of like haven't noticed. Because I feel like this movie, The Hole in the Ground, which is a horror film from 2019, was kind of overlooked, but was excellent. Tonally very spooky, very like outside of the box. And they sort of cherry-picked him to create the new Evil Dead movie. So I think they have like a really good sense of how to get young talent involved with like fresh takes on the series.
I agree. They're great at, you know, I mean, Fede Alvarez, he's gone on to have a great career, and he started his career with Evil Dead based upon one short film that he had made. They were able to look at that short and say, this is our guy. I remember watching, it was available online, I'm not sure if it still is, but you can watch that short. It's a great short, but there is nothing about that that would tell me anyway that this is the guy to do Evil Dead, and yet, my God, they saw it because he knocked it out of the park.
Yes, I saw it too, and I agree. Like, these are not movies that I would have been like, this is the guy for the job, but I think they have a really good eye for it. Like, these are very seasoned Mr. Hollywood types, so I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with it. I feel like it's going to be low budge, because I hear rumblings that it's sort of set in one location. And I think that would be really cool.
It's kind of exciting.
Yeah. Are you aware of the like the rumor of how it's where it's going to take place?
It's a high-rise building in an apartment, right?
Yeah. Which is cool. And they're filming either now or very soon in Auckland, New Zealand, which is where I believe the show was shot, and the remake was definitely shot there as well. And I'm pretty sure it's like the only safe place in the world to be shooting right now. So
yeah, exactly. New Zealand, pretty lucky. New Zealand had competent leadership, so people can actually shoot.
Yes, the best. I know.
And they believe in science.
They're filming Drag Race now there too. I know. Too bad it's literally 7 years away on a plane.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't do it. I just don't think I would. If someone was like, do you want to go to New Zealand for free? I'd be like, no. It's too far. I don't want to. Yeah, if you were like, how do you feel about like a 24-hour plane ride? Can you do it?
Me? if I had to, and I definitely want to see more of the world than I have up until this point, but I will say I'm in Florida now. I did kind of long distance relationship for a while. I was flying up to Ohio. It was a 90-minute plane flight, and I just gotten used to, I got rid of my butterflies. I was okay with boarding a plane and flying. Everything was great. And the last trip that I took up there, turbulence. So it was like a paper plane in a windstorm. That's what it felt like.
I've never been through that.
I'm good. You know, I would love to travel to New Zealand by ship. So no, maybe carrier pigeon. I don't know. I trust them more than the metal contraptions that we get into to fly from place to place more, I think.
Good. I had the world's worst phobia of flying for so long. I hadn't been on a plane in like 10 years. And then I made a film and it went well. And then all of a sudden we had to travel for it. And I was so scared. And then we like traveled to like 5-6 places and now I'm not scared at all. And then the world ended. So I like got over my phobia. It was very hero's journey. And then literally like 75% through our tour, we had to stop. And it was ironic.
No, but I hear you. It's tough to get over. I had just gotten to the point where I told myself, you know what? This is no different than traveling on a road. Sometimes you get like new paved highway and it's smooth as can be. And sometimes you're traveling on a gravelly back road, and sometimes there are potholes. Just look at it that way. Mm-hmm. Potholes in the sky, right? And that's all well and good until you start seeing like the wings leaping up and down, and it feels like you're dropping 10 feet at once and then raising back up in the air. Then you can't really talk yourself out of your nerves at that point.
There's a gremlin on the wing. There's an old Victorian lady on the other wing. There's not good.
Something on the wing. Something.
Exactly. I have never been through severe turbulence, so I kind of feel like that would literally restart my whole journey. So I hope that doesn't happen for me anytime soon.
Well, it ended mine, so.
I bet it did. Is that relationship still active and successful?
No, it's not. I'd like to think that last plane flight was the harbinger of doom. So, all things considered, I will say thank you, plane flight.
Well, you know what? It's about the journey. It's not about anything else. I don't know. Breakups suck. I'm sorry.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Better, if that makes sense.
I mean, listen, there's nothing worse. Like, it's being single is so much better than being in a relationship that's not working. That's my wholesome advice. So you were saying you're a fan of the series. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
I need to watch it again. I've seen it once all the way through. It wasn't exactly what I was expecting from an Evil Dead TV series, but now that I'm sort of more familiar with Army of Darkness, I'm like, yeah, it does make us, it's very progressive of Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, and then the show. It's like these are three different entities, but they do make sense one to the next.
Oh, absolutely. And I do love that the series went, you know, obviously because of the rights issues with Universal, they couldn't directly reference Army of Darkness, but obviously this is still the same
guy. Did it change by the end of the series?
I don't know. Possibly.
I thought it did, but I didn't get any info on it.
I do love, though, that it goes out of its way to marry the continuities of the first two movies. So it acknowledges, obviously, the sisters from the first. It acknowledges the events from the second, you know, in a wonderful way. And it's just, it kind of puts to bed that argument as to whether or not Evil Dead 2 is a sequel or a remake.
I agree. And ultimately, it doesn't matter because we have it and I'm grateful. So on the commentary track for the first season of Ash vs. the Evil Dead, have you listened? Are you this much of a nerd?
I have not listened to any of the commentaries too much.
Listen, it's not 2005. We're not listening to DVD commentaries anymore, so that's okay.
We're not, but we should.
We should be. I agree. I mean, listen, as a concept, it's genius. Like, I want to hear a director talk about his movie from beginning to end all the time. We should normalize this again. I think it's Sam Raimi did share a few of his discarded ideas for future Army of Darkness films on the commentary. So I'm just going to read us through it. Here's a quote. So for one of these Army of Darkness sequels, or potentially Evil Dead 4, it's kind of hard to differentiate between the two, unquote. So the idea was, Bruce is a documentary filmmaker, And I remember one of the ideas was him capturing his own journey through life. I remember we started to write one version of Evil Dead 4, and then someone else chimes in by saying, Bruce travels across the country to sell his documentary through in his car to sort of explain the importance of the story he told. And I was like, okay, it kind of sounds interesting. Like, My Name is Bruce. Have you ever seen that?
I was going to say, is when they say Bruce, are they meaning Ash or do they mean Bruce Campbell Bruce?
I think they mean Ash. But you know how like they were going to call it Bruce Campbell versus the Evil Dead, where it's sort of like hard to differentiate between the two entities? But it's hard to know. I think they were talking about Ash. So it's sort of like a road trip movie, which makes sense for sure. I think like he made a documentary on his life. I don't know. This out of all of the ideas that they talk about is the one I understand the least. So I'm going to jump us to the next one, which simply Ash fighting a Terminator style army of machines. Yes, please. I'm assuming that's like the continuation of the alternative ending Army of Darkness is just my assumption.
Yeah, that would have to be the case. But would they have any sort of relationship to the Deadites or the Necronomicon? That would be strange if it went just hard sci-fi.
How could they not? I think it's like, then I'm assuming and hoping and just making this up, where it would be like Deadites of the future, where it's like Deadites, but like make it Terminator, you know?
Cyborg Deadites? I would be down for
that. Yeah, it's just like a zombie head, like on a big machine robot thing. Why not? And the last one, which is I think my favorite idea, was they were playing with the idea of incorporating both of the Evil Dead endings. And there's the US version, which sees Ash return to Michigan, and then the foreign version, which you see Ash go to the post-apocalyptic future. And Raimi wrote, we wrote Evil Dead 4 that followed both realities. We were going to be following both Bruces, one in the future and simultaneously cross-cutting to the Bruce here in the present. But then they realized that didn't make any sense and they stopped writing it. But I kind of just, it's just so Evil Dead territory, in my opinion. It's
they
just so wacky.
They should have made that. Could you imagine sliding doors via Army of Darkness?
Sliding like, doors,
come on. Yes. Why not do that?
That's
movie?
What that is. And also, like, you have to be in on the joke to such a huge degree to get what's going on there, right? Like, I didn't know about the two versions of the ending for, like, a lot, like, there's just so many people that would not have understood it. And I think that may have been the problem with the marketing behind Army of Darkness, where, like, they're assuming more people know what's going on with these movies than they really do. And so they're not spelling it all out in a way that they kind of need to for the average Joe. And so it's just, like, filmmaker fantasy filmmaking, where, like, you're doing whatever you want to do and it doesn't really matter about the marketing angle, but I do love this concept. It's so strange.
Yeah, I do too. That is the one they should have gone with. I still want to see that movie.
I want to see that movie too. And at the end, very end of this, which we're getting to, I promise, you and I, because we're the professionals, we're going to decide definitively if we're going to get an Army of Darkness follow-up. But we're almost there. We're almost there. Okay, to wrap up Army of Darkness 2 territory, do you know or have you read the comic books?
Yes. Yeah. So I am, I'm kind of a, well, it depends. You know, I really dig the Dynamite comics that I've read. The earlier ones, the ones that started around, I want to say like 2003, the earlier ones weren't necessarily that great about capturing the voice of Ash or even the films really. But some of the later arcs are pretty fantastic. There is a run by Steve Niles, the guy who did 30 Days of Night, that's fantastic. There is a crossover with Darkman that is so good it makes me sad that it's not a film.
Cool.
There's this Mad Max-esque old man Ash sort of tale called Furious Road that's worth checking out.
I've seen some art from that. Yeah.
There is even a crossover with the Marvel Zombies, which means that Ash is a part of the Marvel multiverse, which I adore.
Finally.
And there are the two series of Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash, which started off as an adaptation of the unproduced sequel to Freddy vs. Jason. Weird note. Apparently there is some sort of dodgy rights issues with Army of Darkness and Universal in regards to those comic books. And somehow, some way, the original team of, you know, Raimi and Tappert and Campbell, they were kind of cut out of that deal. And so they don't really see anything from any of those comics. I was at a convention once, again, I think in Lexington, Kentucky, maybe it was Louisville. And it was announced, this was around the time that those comics had come out, maybe 2-3 years in. It was announced to this massive line that Bruce Campbell would sign anything you wanted him to sign, except for the Dynamite comic books. He refused to put pen to comic book in that case, which I thought was kind of fascinating.
That is fascinating, because I don't see him as a petty guy, but I do see him, I don't know, I see him as a very, like, he takes this stuff seriously, so I bet it's a good reason.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just my instinct of the good guys.
Well, I could just see him being like, you know, Ash is me, and Ash is Raimi and Tappert, Ash is all of us, and this yeah, is not...
don't fuck us over.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with us, therefore it's not Ash, therefore you really don't need my signature on it because it has nothing to do with me. I kind of get that. There is. Now, I don't know if this would have to be licensed through Raimi and Tappert and Campbell, I would think, because there's also a line of Evil Dead 2 comic books that start at the end of the movie and it kind of zigs where you expect it to zag. And so it splits in a very, I tell you what, if you're going to read the comics, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but there's a very, very smart way that Evil Dead 2 in the comic books diverges from Army of Darkness. So it kind of does the sliding doors thing we talk about. Of course, it doesn't acknowledge anything in Army of Darkness is happening, but it continues on with the adventures of Ash beyond Evil Dead 2. And it's not Army of Darkness, and it does make sense. And they're a lot of fun, and they're well worth checking out if you can track them down.
Okay, well, I'm obsessed with that. I also think that's such a beautiful way to wrap up our Army of Darkness 2 segment. So thank you. And I think we're going to head to conclusions. Do we believe that we're ever going to see a continuation of Army of Darkness specifically? Now, be careful, because your final answer is the final answer, and we're going to lock it in, and that's just going to be canon.
We will. So, we'll sort of have to send out a memo to Mr. Yes. Raimi and Campbell and Tappert.
Oh, no, they're here, actually. They're like, they're guys. Freaking out. Yeah, they're really nervous. So, but we trust us. We have to make this decision. So obviously we're going to get new Evil Dead. So that's not the question, but Army of Darkness specifically, like, are we going to get Army of Darkness 2? Are we going to get that follow-up to this movie?
Okay, so is this what I want or what I think will happen?
No, what you think will happen.
Okay, so will we ever see a continuation to Army of Darkness? Honestly, no, I don't think so. I don't think we'll see Ash again. I think, you know, as you noted, I think the Evil Dead franchise will continue on with these sort of unconnected one-offs, even though they may, you know, cross over with one another, who knows, but I doubt... we'll see more Army of Darkness, even though we could, you know, looking at the comic books and the zaniness of the films, I think that Universal could sequelize that film by simply doing kind of a multiversal tale and acknowledging that the, you know, in the comic books, there are multiple realities. It's very Into the Ashverse, if that makes sense. I think if Universal were smart enough and they found a creative team smart enough to acknowledge that the Ash that we would have to have in an Army of Darkness sequel is not necessarily the only Ash, and certainly isn't Bruce Campbell. I think that's the only way to do it. I think you can't simply recast Bruce Campbell. You'd piss off the entirety of the fan base you would need to be courting. But if you dealt with it honestly on kind of a story level and maybe even invited on Raimi and Tappert and Campbell to produce so as not to insult the creators, then maybe we'd have something. I don't know. But honestly, my feeling is at this point, you know, Army of Darkness was not a massive hit for Universal back in the day. You know, and maybe they want to work with Raimi down the road. He's obviously off doing his own thing with the franchise and the character. So I honestly don't see much in the way of a benefit for Universal to continue the franchise. And as a result, I don't think we'll ever see more Army of Darkness.
Well, Bruce literally just walked out. He's upset. but that, you know, I'm going to have to talk to him later. I think it's going to be okay. But I agree. I don't think we're going to get it in the same way that it's been talked about over the years or in any similar to what we've seen thus far. Although I think there's a chance we could see like, you know, like Mia in the medieval times, or like get a different character thrown into medieval times, like maybe, but it doesn't seem likely.
Could you imagine kind of a riff on Army of Darkness with Mia, but it's as deadly serious as her Evil Dead?
See, I would love to see that. I would absolutely love it. Yeah, definitely. Or even just like a female character with a guy name, send her into the past, similar thing. I'm into that.
Yeah, call Max. I mean, character could be called Ash again, you know?
Yeah, it could be. I like that. Well, you know, you never know, even though we do know because we've made the decision and it's definitive.
I'm sorry, guys.
I thank you for your bravery. I know we're not here to make friends. This isn't RuPaul's best friend race. But I think that we made the right choice. And I think it was a responsible, I think, outcome.
I think so.
Yeah. Jason, I want to thank you so much for coming on my podcast. This was so much fun to talk about.
Yeah,
literally the most fun topic of all time, probably.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was an absolute blast, and I will never miss an opportunity to talk about really anything. But it was definitely a blast chatting with you, and certainly about horror that never was. You know, it's obviously a passion for us both, and it was definitely great chatting with you about it. Thank you so much for having me on.
You can also follow us online on basically any social media platform, and you should like and comment and just engage with us because we are bored. So that's it for this week. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and write a review because it really helps us get seen in this vast, endless hell of horror movie podcasts. See ya.